Welcome to Beat Infertility, a podcast where we get real about infertility, empower you to take back control, and provide you with hope for the future. Ready? Here's your host, fellow infertility warrior, Heather Hooman.
Welcome to episode 221. Today you'll hear the success story of a woman named Rebecca. She is a 40-year-old therapist who enjoys spending time with her family. Rebecca's period has been excruciating from the start. Her doctor at the time suspected endometriosis, so she went on the pill, hoping for relief. She thought she didn't want children and thus didn't pursue it further. However, her perspective changed when she met her husband. An HSG revealed that one of her tubes wasn't functioning. After medicated timed intercourse, an IUI didn't result in a pregnancy. They tried mini IVF. They retrieved 6 eggs, 5 of which fertilized. She became pregnant with twins after transferring 2 day 3 embryos. However, only one survived and resulted in her daughter. Let's listen to how Rebecca transferred her day 5 and day 6 embryos a year later and became pregnant with twins. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't we start, as we always do, by hearing a little bit about you. How old are you? What do you do for a living? And what do you do for fun?
Wow. Where to begin? Okay. I turned 40 this year. I used to have a lot of fun. Now I have a 4-year-old and 2-year-old twins. So I try to squeeze in fun between like 8 and 9 p.m., but it's very limited these days. What I do for work is actually kind of fun, in all honesty. I work with women along their motherhood journey, supporting them to and through motherhood. I specialize in fertility, but I work with women at all stages of motherhood. So I meet with moms throughout the day in meetups and get-togethers and gathering on the phone, in person, and I connect with people. I build communities, and it motivates me. It's what my passion is. So it's kind of all connected these days.
Think about your life before infertility. Back then, how would you describe yourself as a person?
I guess what was interesting is that I never wanted children. So it was never a thought of mine. It was never a concern of mine. My mother had had 5 or 6 miscarriages before and after me. And had I thought I wanted kids, I would have maybe been concerned, perhaps gotten checked earlier on. But I was a very free-spirited person. The only thing I really ever wanted in life was to meet the guy that I was going to ultimately be with. And so when I wasn't meeting him, I've been living in New York my whole life. I was going out. I had an amazing social life. I did all the things at all the times, and life worked, and it was wonderful. And I went to all the concerts. I love fish. I still go see fish. It was always, I just went with it. I went with life, and it was easy. I met my husband and decided, oh, wait a second, I do want kids. He's the best thing that ever happened to me. How cool would it be if we did that thing together? And then I was told I couldn't have kids. And I still wasn't really confident that I wanted children. But when I was told that I couldn't have children, that's when I was like, you don't get to tell me that. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this happen. And then I set to work. And I've always been a very motivated person. And I've always been a project-oriented person. And so I quickly jumped into whatever I needed to do. And that was my entire focus for the amount of time that I was on my infertility journey. So it went from free-flowing, free love, free whatever to, okay, mission-oriented, mission-driven.
Speaking of your husband, tell me about the first time you met him.
Funny story. We connected online. That's how we met in the first place. And he asked me, after talking for about 2 weeks, he said, what are you doing next Thursday? And I was like, oh my God, this guy is asking me out on Valentine's Day. He clearly likes me. I only learned later that he, up until that age, which was I think 35, he had never owned a calendar. So he didn't know what quote unquote next Thursday was. So he was also just free flow and going with it. But to me, he was like, I was certain this guy really knew what was up. He is the most amazing man ever. And I knew that talking to him online, there was just something, a different connection with him than I had had. And I had been on JDate and I had been online dating. I had gone on well over 100 first dates. And when I met him, I just knew something was different. He's awesome. And he is the opposite of me in every sense of the word. He didn't fit any of the criteria that I had on my list. And I literally knew the first time I met him that he was the one I wanted to be with.
Today, how would you describe you and your husband as a couple?
back to my earlier point, we have a 4-year-old and 2-year-old twins. So the free-flowing personality and go with the flow attitude that we used to have, unfortunately, has shifted some. I don't know fully that it had to do with the infertility aspect of our journey. I think it, at this point, at least, has to do with the fact that we have to keep 3 children alive and manage the finances of living in New York City, having those 3 children, sending them to school, living in an apartment in the city, feeding them, all of those things. So it's stressful, perfectly honestly. My husband has a full-time job. He's an artist for a not-for-profit company, and he's currently carrying the majority of the weight, and that's a lot of pressure for him. What I do is a lot more flexible, and it allows me to work from home sometimes, and it allows me to work from offices at different times or go into people's homes. So what I'm doing is a lot more being available for the children, getting them to their early intervention they need, and doctor's appointments and all of that. So it's and my meetups for moms. So it's a lot of pressure is really on him, and he takes it in stride, and he's an amazing man. But it's not easy at this point in our lives.
So you spent most of your life not wanting to be a mom. Tell me about that moment when things changed.
I really think it was the moment I met him. It was kind of like the world all made sense and it was all clear. And I just felt an enormous shift and change of interest. And it was like, wait, this is awesome. This, I'm doing something more with this person than just living and existing. It feels important and it feels necessary. And it was just this identity shift. I was like, all right, this is what I want to do. And I'm a pretty impulsive person. I don't always think through things. And it, funnily enough, if that's a word, I think children kind of went along with that. I was like, all right, let's just do it. We're going to do it. And that was how we did it. And those are the steps we took was, okay, I'm going to go to this doctor. And then this doctor told me I have to go to that doctor. And from there, it unfortunately just rolled out the way that it did. But it was an interesting journey to get there.
How did that shift in longing to be a mother impact other decisions in your life from there?
That's a big question. It really, from that moment, my entire life and the trajectory and the course it was on, it changed, it shattered, it broke, it flourished. I don't even know what the right word is, because the moment that I was told I couldn't have children naturally, everything in my life changed. From that moment, I realized how important it was for the work that I ended up doing, that I do now. I realized on a much smaller scale at that moment in time how much influence I needed to have in the fertility world and the motherhood world, because from my experience, there wasn't a ton of support out there. When I started looking myself, I was looking for support. I was looking for other people on this journey. I was looking for camaraderie, community, friendship, resources, and I didn't find anything. And so at that moment, I started building. I started building what now is called the Warriors Groups. It's a bunch of different Facebook groups that I've managed and run and facilitate now for the past 5 years, I guess. It didn't exist when I was going through my journey. And so I started it. And because of that moment, that time, that decision, everything has changed course.
Let's dive into the journey to build your family. Take us through the whole thing, starting at the beginning.
Sure. Well, I think because I never wanted children, I never considered that I hadn't really had any oops along my path. And I had, you know, I had my share of partners and my share of poor decisions, and still never had any moment of, I did something wrong, or I might have to manage something or handle something or deal with something. When I ended up going in at 35 years old to get tested, because we had tried for a little while and nothing was working. And so I said, you know, I want to take action. I want to take next steps. I have no idea what the doctors are going to say, or if there is something wrong, if there's not something wrong. So I went in, I had an HSG, I got tested. It turned out that one of my fallopian tubes was never going to work. At 35, I was already on the older age of the spectrum when it comes to the amount of eggs that I had, et cetera. And so after finding out that I was not going to be able to get pregnant at least every other month, and then probably not at all, and being 35, I went to a doctor, and they put me on a course of action, and they said, okay, it's been this long, and we're going to give you 3 months. We're going to have you do one round of timed intercourse. When that didn't work, they said, okay, we're going to do one round of timed intercourse with medication. When that didn't work, they said, okay, we're going to do one IUI with medication. And when that didn't work, they said, okay, we're going to move to IVF. They had said that usually within 3 months of an HSG, if you are able to get pregnant, it will likely happen then because they kind of clean out your entire system. And it did not happen. So we started out on the IVF journey. And in all honesty, I had not done my research at all. I found out what clinics took my insurance. I made an appointment in one and then found out that was more of an institution and a big New York City clinic. And it felt like I was definitely going to be a number, but I thought, okay, well, numbers probably mean success rate too. And they seem to have good success rates. And then I had found out that a couple of friends of mine actually had gone to another clinic that my insurance took, and they had gotten pregnant and stayed pregnant. So I ended up at New Hope, and Dr. Zhang was the main doctor at the time and didn't understand much of what he was saying. I just wanted him to get to the punchline. I wanted him to tell me what I needed to do, what the steps were going to be, what medication I had to be on for how long, et cetera. And once he gave me a plan, I just went with it without questioning it, without doing my own research. I just wanted to take action. So what they do at New Hope often, depending on your age, depending on your diagnosis, depending on many other criteria, they focus on something called mini IVF, which is less invasive, fewer drugs, and their intention is to ultimately get better quality embryos as opposed to a higher quantity of eggs. So they weren't aiming for 30 or 20 or 15 or even 10. They were very happy when they were able to retrieve 6. So I had 6 eggs that they were able to retrieve. I ended up with 5 that made it to blast. I put 2 fresh ones in and I froze the other 3. So I put 2 fresh ones in and ultimately 1 stuck and 1 stayed. And I ended up with a very healthy, small baby girl. She was born at 38 weeks after I was in labor for a week with her. And she came out at 5'2". She's now 4 years old. And she's amazing and she's perfect. And I was sure we only wanted one child. I said, okay, I didn't want any. Now we have 1. She's so amazing that I want to do this again. And my husband said, we're good with 1. This is our life. This is perfect. And I said, I am not done. And I knew that I had 3 still frozen. And so we hoped and expected for the same outcome. So almost a year to the day, my daughter's first birthday, we transferred 2 more. Those 2 ended up sticking. And I ended up with twins 20 months after I had my first child, a boy and a girl, and they were born at 4:15 and at 5:05. And I have 3 healthy children now from my one single round, my 2 successful transfers, and I ended up with 1 leftover embryo. And I really had to think long and hard about what the best course of action for me to take with that was. And I ultimately decided to donate it to science so they would be able to learn from my experience and hopefully help others in the future. And the very interesting thing for me in this was the embryos that I ended up transferring were a day 5 and a day 6. So 24 hours before that, my plan had been to transfer my day 5 blast and my day 7. But I was standing in the hall meeting with the doctor 24 hours before they were going to thaw them. And I said, you know what, let's just do the 5 and 6. Let's give it 100%. And I have no idea what would have been had I transferred the day 7 instead, but one of my children would not have been mine. Who knows what life would be now, but that is a very prominent point in my life because I wouldn't be where I am without that decision in that hall and that one day.
You were diagnosed with endometriosis pretty early on in life. And again, you weren't really thinking about your fertility at the time. So at what point did you decide to go see a medical professional in your journey? And why was that the moment?
I had had endometriosis when I was really, really young. And I didn't know enough to know that that could potentially have an impact on the future of my decision for to have children or not. I grew up in Westchester. I've been living in Manhattan now for 20 plus years. It never occurred to me to have any of my documents sent from one doctor to another. So there was no conversation with to among anybody about any of this. So my most previous gynecologist referred me to one place, that place referred me to another place. And then I ended up meeting after laying on a metal slab to get checked for the HSG. From that, the doctor sent me to a reproductive endocrinologist. And that was after about 4 or 5 months of trying naturally with my husband to get pregnant around our wedding and after, and nothing happening. I had been off birth control for a while at that point, and we had not been particularly safe. And so, again, I hadn't had any oops or what ifs or any of that. So once I did a little bit of back thinking and realized that it was interesting that I had never had an accident, quote unquote, it was probably time for me to get checked. So I followed all doctor's orders. I went to each doctor that the next doctor recommended and ended up at a clinic.
Once you got to that clinic, what was your initial impression of the doctor, the staff, and did your impression ever change over time?
That's an interesting question. So I run a lot of these Facebook groups now, and a lot of questions come up is about doctors, about clinics, about the feeling at a clinic, whether people want to be coddled or need to be coddled, or whether they're ultimately just after getting pregnant and staying pregnant, or what the communication style is, what the wait style is. And I think there's a lot of different criteria that matter to many different types of people, many different personalities. The clinic that I went to, so Dr. Zeng was my doctor. He had an interpreter in the room because of his challenging accent. So it was hard to understand him. So he had somebody who would explain what he was saying. And I don't think I actually really understood what he was saying scientifically, medically, but I didn't care at the time. I had one track mind. I said, okay, how can I get pregnant and have a baby? That was all that mattered to me. So that was my goal. I didn't mind the waiting room. I thought it was calm. I thought it felt comfortable. I did feel like a bit of a number, but my name would come up on a screen. I would go in for monitoring. They would do what they needed to do, send me back out. I would wait again. Then the next person would call me in. The way that the clinic works, this particular one, is you don't really ever talk to your doctor almost ever again. So a lot of women that I talk to, meet with, work with, they are in direct communication with their doctor every step of the way. I was doing this totally on my own. I just expected this is how it worked. And it's all I knew. So I would go to the doctor. I went to the doctor that one time, and every other version of communication was either quickly in passing, I would see the doctor in the hall and he would say, looks good. And that would be it. Or if there was any information, it would come through an email later that night through a nurse. Now, the information always felt piecemeal, and sometimes it actually was inaccurate. I had been told to take different medications, and I had started doing a little more research on my own, and I would follow up and say, oh, you know, from my understanding at this point in my journey, I should be taking this, or I think that this is the correct amount. And they would say, oh yeah, you're right. It's actually this much, et cetera. And so there was a lot of times that I unfortunately caught them in something that was not accurate, and I don't know what that would have ultimately meant for that particular cycle. So luckily it did all work out for me. But when I talk to people, particularly about this clinic, I say it got me pregnant twice. It kept me pregnant twice. And I have 3 healthy babies from it. But the communication style was very challenging, and it's not for everybody.
What would you say was your biggest takeaway as a fertility clinic patient?
I think my biggest takeaway from going through this experience in general is that you absolutely need to be your biggest advocate. You can't rely on anybody else, even a doctor or a nurse or somebody in that clinic, to give you all of the information you need. There's a lot more out there. There's a lot more knowledge out there. There's a lot more education out there. And it's really important for you to understand what you're doing, what the protocol is, what the ultimate outcome is based on what the doctors or clinicians are saying to you, and really be your own advocate, because you just can't count on anybody else, unfortunately.
You're a therapist, so I think I can guess what you're going to say to this, but what do you feel like you needed most during this journey?
So I think the fertility journey is and can be an incredibly, incredibly challenging experience. I think emotionally it's draining. I think physically it's draining. And I think not enough people have found support or community among other people who are going through something very similar to them. Everybody's journey is different. Whether you are going through IUI, whether you have suffered many losses, whether you're going through IVF, whether you're a single by choice person, whether you're in a couple, whether you're in a same-sex couple, whether you're using donor egg, whatever your aspect of the journey is, there are other people who are on a similar path. And I so highly recommend finding your community, your people, a coach, a therapist, someone, a lot of someones to help you, to carry you through it, because it is so isolating and it can be so lonely and so unbelievably overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. And I think that's what these warriors communities have turned into for people, is there, it's a safe space for women to come connect and just be surrounded by other people who are also offering resources and who've also been on the journey for an extended period of time. But just the camaraderie and the support and the love you need to feel connected to something, because you can feel so lost and out of control during this process.
I want to hear more about how you made the decision to donate your final embryo to science.
It was a really difficult decision to decide to donate the last embryo. I knew we were done. As much as in an ideal world, I wasn't 40 and we had all the money in the world and more than 2-bedroom apartment that we could have made it happen, it just was not realistic for me. I wish that I had a big enough heart to give it to a couple in the hopes that they could grow their family. I know how devastating and desperate and hard this journey is. And if I could have done that, I wish that I had it in my, I don't know what the right word is, but I wish that I had been able to make that decision, but I just couldn't do that with my and my husband's makeup. I just did not feel comfortable having a potential other child out there that would have felt like part of my family. My sister is adopted. I support many people through gestational and adoption and all of the courses of different ways to make a family. But for me personally, I just didn't feel comfortable enough with it. I'm so grateful that there are people there. And I know there's actually a lot of women in my Warriors groups who have made that decision and who have donated their embryos to families who are looking to grow their family. And I'm so grateful and so thankful. I wanted to do something. I knew that I had to do something. There was no way that I was discarding it. That was never an option. So in my journey to become a supporter of women in this space, I really had to think long and hard what the best way I could do that was. And by creating the communities, that was one thing. And by supporting women emotionally and personally, that was another. But being able to actually help the world, or the medical field, the science field, understand better why women who are going through either endometriosis or unexplained or whatever the prognosis is, if I could help in any way further the learning experience, the education for the next generation of women who go through this, that was the very least I could do. So it was actually not a hard decision. Ultimately, I knew that I was unable to give it to a family. I knew I wasn't discarding it, and I knew that I wanted to help. So science was the obvious answer for myself and Nathan.
I was just going to say, I take it your husband was on the same page. What did that conversation with him look like?
So like I mentioned before, Nathan has always been a very go with the flow person, and he has strong feelings for what he has strong feelings for. If it's a topic that I also have strong feelings for, we'll discuss and come to a mutual decision. But for the most part, he is pretty open to going along for the ride with certain things. This was one of them. We actually never even discussed donating it to a couple or a family or whomever, because I knew that unequivocally I was unable to do that. I don't know that he had even thought much about what the options were. But when we were sitting in the clinic and I said, okay, we're signing right now and this is what we're going to sign, it was a quick conversation because it was very clear that this is what we needed to do. Neither of us were going to discard it. That just felt that was not even an option. So we didn't even have to touch on that one. And for us, an embryo is an embryo is an embryo. It's not a baby. It's not a child. It's what it is. It was sperm. It was egg. It was our genes put together and turned into what in the future could have been something else. But what it is right now is DNA makeup that we pass along. There was no conversation. It was just, that was it. We signed it and we passed the form to the clinician, and that was it.
Take us to that moment when you found out one of your tubes wasn't working and the aftermath of all that.
It was interesting because immediately after I had my HSG, I don't even know what kind of a person reads that, but whomever was in the room with me and looked that over, he said, "Oh, you're fine. You should be able to get pregnant." I was like, "Oh, okay. So I guess that's it. I have no problem and I can go along and easily conceive." And then when I ended up in the reproductive endocrinologist's office, he showed me a picture. He showed me my X-ray, or whatever the information was. And then he showed me female anatomy and pictures of this and pictures. He showed me kind of all these books and all these images and all of these things and pointed to something and pointed to something else. And he said, "And here's why this is never going to work for you." And I found it just very interesting at first that one doctor would say one thing and then another doctor would say something else. But again, at that point, I was not really in the information gathering stage. I was in the, okay, so what action do I need to take stage? And perhaps had I done more research at the time, perhaps had I looked into further resources, maybe there would have been a different decision, a different course of action, something else that I could have learned, changed, altered. I'm not really sure, in all honesty, because I didn't look back. I just said, okay, tell me what I need to do. And I was project oriented. The project was getting pregnant. It was not learning more, reading more, getting a second opinion, speaking to somebody else. It was, okay, how do I ultimately have a child? Tell me what to do. And I think now, as I speak with women who are in this journey, I do ask them if they feel comfortable with the decision that's being made, if they feel comfortable with the information they have, or if they feel like they need to learn more about themselves, about their body, about the prognosis, about the diagnosis, about the suggestions. Because I think that what I know now, I wish I knew then. And that's really, like I said before, to be an advocate and really make sure you fully understand everything. I got very lucky that it worked for me. My problem was getting pregnant, not staying pregnant. So I was able to stay pregnant and have my amazing children. But I know there are people out there who are often at a loss because they've been for a first, second, third opinion, and every doctor has not been able to figure it out. And some of those people are the most read and most well-versed in every topic, fertility and reproductive, everything. So I think you can know so much. And unfortunately, and like I talked to, whenever I speak to somebody new, I say, unfortunately, there is no absolute in the long game here. We try something else. We hope, we listen, we take advice. We, you know, if something isn't working, maybe we call an audible or we try some Eastern medicine or we acupuncture or herbs or anti-inflammatory food. You know, there's so many things that we know now that I did not know then that I do wish that I had been more educated on at the time.
What was the lowest point during your journey and how did you regain the strength to keep moving?
I think because I was so goal oriented and really didn't let the emotional toll have its way with me, for better or for worse. I'm not saying that was the right way to do it, but I was so oriented towards the ultimate goal that any setback, any challenge, I would just say, okay, what's next? What's the next step? What are the next drugs? And it kind of just, having a plan for me, the next step was comforting to know, okay, so this didn't work, but I can do this. And for those of us who have gone through this, it's not only is it challenging because ultimately you want to get pregnant and it's not working, but the drugs that you put into your body, the drugs you ingest, the injections, that's all physically hard. That is, there's no way around that. I know a lot of the oral medication makes you feel very different from yourself, and that does. The estrogen, the progesterone, there's so much that you're putting into your body that makes you feel crazy and not like you, and your relationship with your partner. You want to be having sex for fun, and especially if you're newly married, and instead you're peeing on sticks and crying because this month you're not pregnant again. And every step of the way there is a disappointment, and or you get pregnant and then you regrettably, devastatingly lose it, and you had the high and then you have the low. And I think with this journey, this path, that so many of us find ourselves on now, there are so many highs and lows. And for me, it was just knowing that there was something to look towards for the next month and the next month. And if that wasn't going to work, what was the ultimate next plan? And I think for me, just trying to stay positive and stay on course was really what I try to focus on and really help me the most. I do wish that I had had a community more, people to talk to. I really was on this journey on my own. My husband, of course, was there and supportive and wonderful. For those of us who go through it personally, it's very different to be able to have a conversation with another woman who's experiencing a lot of what you are than having a conversation with your husband, who probably has felt like you've had the same conversation with him a million times, and there's nothing more he can do, and there's nothing more the doctor can do, and there's nothing else that you can do. And they want to enjoy life again. And a lot of us take, it becomes all we focus on, our entire world. Can't focus on anything positive anymore. It's just, what drugs do I need to take? What time do I have to go in for monitoring? How do I handle work? And how do I tell work that I'm not going to be in from 8 to 9 that morning, and again the next day, and again 2 days later? And just the ongoing drama and saga that this journey is. It's until you have that healthy baby. And then for those who deal with secondary infertility, then it feels like it's ongoing and never ending. And even when you have a beautiful, healthy pregnancy, because you just had this unbelievably challenging journey, you still have that worry in the back of your head that this can't be real. This can't be wonderful. This can't be right. My body failed me before. What's going to happen now? And unfortunately, I think that there is a lot of that. And a lot of us hold on to that for much longer than is healthy.
What about a positive or even funny moment during your journey? Do you have any examples of those?
Positive is obviously when you get your first beta and they tell you, yeah, you're pregnant. You know, there's nothing more than you want. Those are the words you have been waiting for some people your whole life to hear. For some of us, you know, 6 months, but those are the words you want to hear. So that is absolutely the most wonderful and the most gratifying moment of your life. I'm trying to think of funny, and I wish I could say that this journey was funny, but I personally did not experience. I've met incredible women along the way who have now been part of my story, part of my narrative, part of my life. Some of my best friends now, you know, we joke a lot, and the people that I'm talking about in particular, we have had healthy babies and healthy pregnancies. We've also had some losses, and we've been there for that, but we have been able to look back and reflect. And of course we can laugh together, but I really can't think of anything that I would say was funny in all of this, unfortunately.
You did part of your journey without insurance and part with. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience with both and how you were able to make it all work financially?
I had insurance for my first round, but it capped out at $10,000. And for anybody who has been on this journey, you know that's about a fraction of what you need for an entire round. Now, with all of these support groups that are out there, you can ask questions like, where can you get medication for cheap? And is it safe to be purchasing medication from different countries? So these are things that I didn't know at the time. And my doctor said, here's what you need. Here's how much it's going to be. Here's your max. And here's the rest of it. And unfortunately, it did not cover everything. And I did have to pay out of pocket for a lot of the medication. And I think ultimately the transfer, and I don't think any clinic, I know mine didn't, but most do not cover putting you out for retrieval. Some people choose to not go under and either bear with the through the pain or do something more local. But I did not want to have to experience that. So I know I had to pay out of pocket for that as well. So the bills just kept adding up and adding up. And I was unbelievably lucky. My mother, I think probably my whole life, wanted me to have kids, but was never forcing it upon me since she knew I didn't. But then when she learned I wanted to have kids and was told I couldn't, once she found out that I did, in fact, want to take the next steps, she incredibly and generously offered to help. So she gave me a few $1,000 towards the part that wasn't covered in my initial cycle. And then the next round that I did with my twins, I got incredibly lucky. And my insurance, so I had maxed out at $10,000, which was the lifetime maximum. I guess a year later, it changed my insurance plan, and it ended up going up to $25,000 max. So I still had $15,000 more, and that covered everything I needed. So I was out of pocket, but with the help of family, and then I was totally covered thanks to my incredible employer at the time.
How did infertility alter your relationship with your husband?
So we started very early on in our marriage trying to get pregnant because we were both on the older side, and both because I felt like this is what I wanted. Yes, I would have loved to travel the world if timing worked, but that just wasn't in the cards. And I loved him just so much that I wanted to make this happen. And so it was my priority. I don't know that it was his priority, and he didn't really push back much. I think he probably wouldn't have minded a little bit longer, but he knew how important it was to me. And so we jumped pretty much right in after not getting pregnant pretty soon after our wedding. So it became the focus for the first year of our marriage, which is a lot. We had only been together. We got engaged after a year of being together. We got married after 8 months of being engaged. And then within 6 months, we were trying desperately to get pregnant. So that's a lot in a very short amount of time. I think because I was so focused on getting pregnant and trying to keep the emotional side of it at bay, and because I did not have a very, very long stretch. I know a lot of women, 1 year, 2 years, 6 years, 9 years are trying with many, many losses and a lot of uncertainty. We were very lucky that we didn't have that. We had months of it, but ultimately ended up with a healthy pregnancy and baby. So I think that because of that, we were very lucky that we didn't have to also suffer together through the most devastating times. We trudged through almost all of the monitoring appointments on my own. Unfortunately, there was through my first pregnancy, one morning, pretty early on in the pregnancy, I woke up in a pool of blood, and I was certain that was a miscarriage. There was no question that I had lost the baby. And as any of you know who have done this before, that you're beyond lost. You can't even get out of bed. You can't move. And I called my doctor, and he said, "You're fine. If it's not one color, then it just means that you're hemorrhaging. That you have a hematoma." And I said, "No, I definitely. There's so much blood. There's no way that I could still be carrying a baby." And he said, "Okay, it's Friday. If you feel like for peace of mind, you need to go get monitored and go get an ultrasound." And so they checked and the baby had a heartbeat. And it did turn out that I did have a hematoma. And that was unfortunately part of my entire pregnancy. So I bled for many, many, many months. And that was incredibly terrifying every time, even though I knew what they were going to say. It still is not any more reassuring when you have blood pouring out of you. So that was really, that part was very tough. And pregnancy, honestly, it was very hard too. And, you know, I think a lot of us struggle. We have our infertility journey. We are so invested in that journey, not by choice, because that's just what we have to do to get by, get through. And then we feel like we should be so happy to be pregnant because this is all we've ever wanted. But many of us are very, very sick. Many of us end up with terrible ailments where we either are on bed rest or can't walk or whatever the case is. And for both of my pregnancies, I had very, very challenging pregnancies. And I wanted to be so happy that I was pregnant because there were so many of my friends or women in these groups or women out there who I didn't know who were suffering either in silence or suffering. I felt guilty saying, "Okay, well, you know, I actually am hating being pregnant because I should be so happy and honored and overjoyed that I am in this place," which of course I was, but that didn't take away from the true ailments that I had during my pregnancy. So I think there's a lot of that was challenging too for the guilt that we end up, those of us who do end up getting pregnant and having babies, we have guilt around the women who are suffering still or who cannot hold a pregnancy or who cannot hold their baby. I think that is really hard. And that's still hard for me. I struggle a lot with being very involved still in the fertility space, but having three healthy babies, three healthy kids. So I think that, I don't know if that will ever leave the conversation with me and my husband or just my identity now. It's a thin line and challenging place to find yourself when you come to the end of the fertility journey.
You mentioned that your mom helped out financially. At what point did you bring her in on your journey? And were there any other family members that were in on it?
I didn't want to include anybody early on. I felt like I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what my path was going to be. So Nathan and I were on it together alone for a while. We heard the heartbeat and we were still on it alone together. After a few weeks of that, I just couldn't keep it in anymore. And so we ended up telling both of our immediate families, and that was all. I know these days there's a lot of conversation around people telling versus not telling, friends, the public, people outside of their inner circle, 12 weeks, 13 weeks that they're pregnant. And the narrative used to be, well, if I miscarry, I don't want to have to then have a hard conversation with somebody or you know, tell everybody that I lost a baby. But I think in a positive way, I think that's changing. I think a lot of people are more vocal about where they are in their journey a lot sooner. I think people understand that many, many, many people have lost and many, many people have suffered, and you're not alone and you're not on this journey by yourself. And there are people who understand, and you can get the support you need by having the conversations early on and have people be excited with you and then have people support you in the really tough times. And I feel like I wish I knew all of the stuff that I know now. I wish I knew that back then. And it's why I became a doula. It's why I work with women on their fertility journey. I feel like there's so much knowledge that I have now from my own personal experience and from all the women that I've worked with, just stuff that I didn't think of then that I now try to impart or at least educate or share with people that I meet and connect with now, because there's so much need for support and there's no reason to stay quiet. And there are women that I work with who don't tell their families at all. They don't tell them they're using donor eggs, or they don't tell them that they are going through fertility. And of course, I'm never going to tell somebody what they should or shouldn't do. But I always encourage those who are considering opening up to their family to do so, because it's generally speaking, of course, every family is different, but generally speaking, family wants to be involved and supportive and help. And my parents did, and my in-laws did. And I'm so thankful that they were there from very early on to help. My mom still helps with my kids twice a week, many times. So it's to have family involved from the onset is, I think, really, really important if it works for you and your family.
A common theme on the show is self-advocacy, and you've mentioned that several times yourself. What tips do you have for listeners who are still learning how to advocate for themselves?
I think there are so many points that could be made here. I think one big one is insurance. I think insurance is really tough. I know there's a lot of states that luckily it's changing, requirements are changing, IVF coverage is being enforced, which is so amazing. I do still, though, always suggest with anybody that I speak to from go to be having a conversation with both your insurance company as well as your clinic. Make sure that they both know what the parameters are, what the offering is, because there have been so many people who end up stuck in a place where the insurance company is saying one thing, the clinic is saying another thing, and they can't get them to meet in the place where the client needs them to, and they either miss a cycle or end up paying extreme amounts of money out of pocket. So I think whether you do it yourself, whether you hire someone to be your advocate, understanding your insurance, understanding what you need as early on as possible is really important. I think, unfortunately, also dealing with insurance is really challenging. So I think when you're so emotionally drained already, and then you have to fight insurance because they didn't cover something or get you something in time, that's really, really hard. So if you have somebody, your partner, a family member, an advocate, maybe a coach, whomever you are working with to help you with that, sometimes that's really important because you can't do it all yourself. So if there's things that can be delegated out, sometimes I do say, you know, that's part of advocacy, making sure that somebody who's capable can help you in another way. But I think that for me, that's number one, just on the logistical side of things. And other side of things, you always have to be fighting for you. You hope, you know, there's other people in your corner, but at the end of the day, you have to be the one on top of everything. You have to be the one who is dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, making sure the right people are speaking to the right people, the right diagnosis, the right prognosis, the right prescription. You need to make sure that everything is right, because one wrong anything can change the course of action, change the course of your cycle. So really just fully being as in tune with everything from a holistic approach as possible.
How has infertility changed you?
I truly am a different person because of my fertility journey. I've always been somebody who built communities, who would create it. If something was missing, I would build it. If there was a group that needed to be created, I would create that group. If there was a space that needed to be filled, I would fill that space. And I'm grateful that I did. Of course, I would have liked it to be easier for me and for every single person who has gone through it. But as they say now, it's a club that you didn't want to be a part of, but being a part of it actually is incredible, because the people who are on this journey, who have done, you, for example, look what you're doing, look what you've done, look at the people you're reaching. Had we not had the experience we had, we would not have been able to touch the amount of people that we've touched. We would not have been able to impact the amount of lives we've impacted. The amount of messages that I get on a weekly basis, how I have held these people through their journey, how I have changed their lives, how because of the way that I write or speak or supported them, they are where they are. They are who they are. Their life is what it is. They are with the family that they always dreamed of. It is the most motivating factor in everything that has ever happened in my life is talking with these women who generously and kindly thank me for just doing what I feel like I should be doing, which is helping these women. So it wasn't really a choice for me. I had my experience. The career that I was in wasn't for me anymore because my passions had changed. My motivating drive had changed. My entire identity had changed. I will always be Rebecca, who has been to 150 fish shows and went to Skidmore for college and NYU for grad school. I'll always be that person. But I am a mom now who struggled through the fertility challenge and who has made a life for myself to support others, help others through their own journey. And that is who I am now. That is my identity now, to make sure that I can continue to do everything in my power to support anybody who needs to during their challenging moment in time trying to become a mom.
Knowing what you know now, what is one piece of advice that you give to your past self?
I would say I've always been quick to jump on something, whether it's I'm impulsive, whether it's I quickly say no before really giving it more thought, educating myself, gathering information. I would say take any bit of information you get and take a bird's eye view. Don't jump in. Don't take action that second. Take a minute, take a pause, take a breath, take it in, look around, learn, talk to people, educate yourself. Make sure that you are coming at it from the most positive and educated place you can. Give it 100%. Make sure you're part of a community. Make sure you have cheerleaders in your corner. Make sure you and your partner are on the same page as much as possible. Know everything you need to know, but don't overdo it either. There are some people that I work with who the facts that they throw at me, the information, the details that they have researched, it ends up becoming so all-consuming. And you also need to live your life. Life doesn't stop when you go through infertility. Life continues on around you and to you. You have to keep going with it, and you have to keep finding pleasurable things to keep going. You should try hard to not allow yourself to fall into a deep depression, because it can happen. It happens very frequently. Marriages suffer, family relationships suffer, your own personal self-worth suffers, the guilt. There is so much pressure we put on ourselves, and that is so hard to manage and maintain for the duration of your journey and beyond. So I would say be kind to yourself, educate yourself so you feel confident going into whatever decision you're making, but also take a pause, take a breath, breathe, do yoga, meditate, eat as well as you can, but don't beat yourself up. Drink when you need to drink, have your caffeine, do it all in moderation. Just treat yourself well, because we only have one life to live, and you have no idea ultimately what is to come of your fertility journey. So to limit yourself and to take that year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years and lose it entirely, that's also just too devastating to imagine. So do everything you can to continue to be you during your experience and fight for yourself and fight for your family, but still go about life and live it the best possible way you can.
To wrap up the episode, what words of hope would you offer to someone who's just beginning her journey right now?
The thing about fertility is that you just don't know what's to come. The amount of women that I have met who have been on fertility journeys for years and years and then naturally get pregnant and have healthy babies, that's happened to three close friends of mine in the last year. Some people feel so like nothing is ever going to work for them. I know what we say in this space is whenever we hear someone say, oh, just relax, you'll get pregnant that way. There is no truth to that. It is the most infuriating thing in the world. Don't ever say that to somebody. Nobody wants to hear that. That said, it's also really important to try to go into this as stress-free as possible, because body and mind are connected. And if you can come at something with a positive approach, there really is hope. Hope is something that lives within us, but it's also something you reach for. So it is possible to get pregnant through fertility. It is possible to get pregnant naturally. The women that I work with, I say to them at the very beginning for our next session, what I want you to think about is what you want in 5 years, what you want in 10 years, not what you want today or what you want tomorrow, but where do you see yourself? What is your hope? What is your goal? What is your plan? What does your future look like? Because sometimes people get so wrapped up in the day-to-day that they can't think of ultimately what they want. And some women have said to me, I want happiness. I want my sanity back. And they don't even say, I want a happy, healthy baby. And so I think often the hope is what you want your life to look like. And if it is that happy, healthy baby, there are ways to build a family outside of the individual biologically or physically carrying the child. There are ways to create a family in millions of ways these days. And that is the beauty of the time and place we find ourselves in now in this modern day. So I think the hope is if you want it, you can have it. At some point, you might just need to make a tough decision because it might not be the way that you thought or have tried or envisioned.
Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your story with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Infertility Warrior, it's Heather. This episode of Beat Infertility is brought to you by me. Regular listeners of the show know that I struggled during my infertility journey with everything from finding the right clinic to advocating for a protocol customized to my body to allowing infertility to consume my entire existence and everything in between. In other words, I've been where you are. Now that I'm on the other side and have interviewed hundreds of other warriors and fertility experts, I've discovered the fastest way to realize your dream of becoming a parent is to get educated, regain hope, build resiliency, learn self-advocacy skills, and partner with someone who's been there. Whether you're an infertility newbie or a seasoned veteran, it would be my honor and privilege to provide, as one client put it, unwavering support with fully engulfing and genuine empathy. If you'd like to learn more or schedule a free 30-minute call to discuss how I can support you during your infertility journey, go to beatinfertility.co/hope. Now, back to the show.
Thank you for listening to Beat Infertility. Join our free private support community at beatinfertility.co/app. If you find yourself needing additional support, visit our paid programs at beatinfertility.co/hopeyou. If you'd like your story to be considered for a future episode, please fill out the form at beatinfertility.co/contact. Until next time.